It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee and Andy and Alex are all here. And, of course, it's going to be our weekly ritual of when's the new iPhone coming out? What's the new iPhone going to include? Will there be a watch? Will there be an iPad? But we'll also pay tribute to Tim Cook, who 7 years ago this week assumed the CEO mantle at Apple. What's the Tim Cook era really been like? It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 625, recorded Tuesday, August 28th, 2018. Another childless summer. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by CashFly. Make this the last month your CDN bill gives you a headache. Join the thousands of others who trust CashFly's reliable network. For a complimentary detail analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends, visit twit.cashfly.com. And by Quip, the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Visit getquip.com/twit to get your first refill pack free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. And by MasterClass, online classes taught by the world's greatest minds. Visit masterclass.com/MacBreak to unlock access to every MasterClass for one low annual price. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest news from Apple. In the dead zone. This is the part of the orbit around the Earth where you lose all radio contact for 15 minutes because Apple, you know, in 2 weeks is going to announce something. We don't know what. Rene Ritchie is here. He'll probably explain it all to us from iMore.com. He's waiting for the invitation. Andy Iannocco is here. He's waiting to join us on our coverage of the keynote, which I will not be here for. Nice to see you. And from where are you? Washington? Where are you? Your home?
I'm in D.C.
Yep. In D.C. Oh, yeah, in the special set that you and Andy were on. Did you get the peanut shells out of the carpet?
Just barely. Mm. We had to scrape them out.
Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Core. We could start with something like soft, like Tim Cook's Apple.
Mm.
Good article.
And a muse bouche.
Yeah, a little muse bouche. Very good, Andy.
Yeah.
Little article by a guy named Rene Ritchie. Did you draw that, Tim Cook? I think you did.
Yes. Yeah.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
Nicely done. All about the fact that 7 years ago, not today, but a few days ago, 7 years ago, Steve Jobs stepped down effectively and said, Tim Cook's going to run the place. Tim, who was the chief operating officer. It's hard to believe it's only been 7 years. He really has become identified with the company.
It's hard to believe considering how big a founder or co-founder Steve Jobs was.
Yeah. And my dad sent me a nice note the other day saying, it's about 7 years ago you said Jobs is gone. You should sell your Apple stock. It's a good thing we didn't.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks, Dad. It's a good thing we didn't. Yeah, because I'd never hear the end of it then. Tim Cook's done all right in 7 years, huh?
He took Apple to $1 trillion.
Has he? Did you look into the numbers? Has he done more for the stock price than Steve did on his from his return?
It's hard to talk because it's such different times and such different places. I mean, an absolute value, $1 trillion is $1 trillion. And it's hard to also parse what Jobs did to set up that rocket and how well, you know, Tim sat on it and rode it into the stars. So I think it's definitely a combined effort because Jobs did everything to sort of structure the products of the company. And then when Tim Cook came in, he sort of structured the company itself. And those two things working in tandem. It reminds me of Pixar after Disney bought it. You never get the heights of genius or the misses of genius, but you get a much more normalized curve. And I think Tim Cook's done a really good job writing that.
The only problem with Pixar is, did they ever have a failure? I mean, did they ever have a failed movie? Which is kind of an incredible thing.
But the irony of Pixar is that when Jobs bought it, he didn't think he was buying a movie company. He thought he was buying a hardware company.
Yeah.
Right.
And nothing to do with Toy Story or anything. In fact, Steve didn't really want anything to do with Pixar until it won an Academy Award. And then he said, oh, yeah, I'm responsible here.
What? Who owns what? Where?
Well, he did take the money. You know, he gave George, I think it was $10 million for Pixar. And you know, he had, and it was kind of a, you know, he was really interested in that part. I mean, obviously the Mac had been very graphics oriented, and so that was something that he was, you know, kind of connected to. And he really gave the guys free wheel to develop this. I mean, he knew it was going to go somewhere. He just didn't know when or how. And
tell us what they did, because I don't know if people know this story.
Oh, yeah. So they, you know, how they, you know, they had the Pixar machine. The Pixar machine was the graphics machine that did the work, you know, did the rendering, and it actually did compositing and it did a bunch of other things. And then the and you had Ed Catmull and a handful of other folks that were there figuring this out, computer graphics. And they used
it wasn't
for,
them, though. It was for other companies.
They were owned by Lucasfilm. So,
oh, that's right. It was Lucasfilm. That's
so this
right.
was part of Lucasfilm. This was like a little group that was in Lucasfilm, and I think they used it for the young Sherlock Holmes. Was the first graphics that they actually produced. It was the
stained glass.
Stained glass night. And so they did that render, and so they, but it was just not catching up, and it was like, well, we're not really. I don't know when this is going to turn out. We're really using mostly miniatures and models, and that's what we should just focus on. And you know, it wasn't progressing fast enough. And so this is the story I heard. George wasn't sure what to do with it, and Steve was like, "Why don't I buy it from you?" And so they got a hold of it.
Pixar in its official history leaves out Alvy Ray Smith. But he was a big part of this. We actually we have some interviews with Alvy Ray Smith. We're going to put in our new podcast. We're doing a podcast based on the Valley of Genius book. Adam Fisher's very kindly allowed us to do a show with Adam of the tapes of the interviews he did. And he interviewed Alvy Ray Smith. And I think Alvy was a little bitter because he's essentially been written out of the Pixar history.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not sure of his involvement, you know, in that specifically. But he... but anyway,
he was
so
there
when they
started it. I mean, he was one of the founders.
Yeah. And there was, what then happened, of course, was that they were kind of left to their own devices, and what they had to do is they started doing shorts. That's where he had the Luxo Jr., which you see at the beginning of every movie. Was they started kind of testing little shorts, and they still do shorts. I mean, this is like a cultural thing that went all the way back to the beginning.
And that was, John Lasseter, who they had kind of stolen away from Disney.
Well, he wasn't happy there. Disney thought, you know, he had all these ideas of how to use computer graphics, and Disney thought he was crazy. And so they, you know, he left and came over, and then they started doing these little stories. And some of the early stuff was, you know, it's very rough. You know, it was amazing at the time, but it was very rough in the 80s. And then
Luxo Jr. basically created in 86 to sell the hardware. It wasn't a business or anything. It was a demo.
Yeah, but the guys always had a vision of doing. I mean, there was a business model for the hardware. There was a business model that was building for RenderMan. There were business models that were related to that process. But they, you know, a lot of them had dreams of doing stuff with it as well. You know, and so anyway. So the you know, and then they were doing commercials, because I mean that still the commercials took a long time to render back then. And that really cut all their teeth and got them to a point where they could get funding to do Toy Story. And you know, that's the, but it was years. If you look at that, I mean, I want to say a decade or near a decade, of messing about, you know, essentially to get to Toy Story.
Yeah.
And what made Toy Story great was, you know, the story, you know, it was rendered incredibly well. But even when you look back now at Toy Story, at the quality, it's, you know, it's, at the time it was amazing. Now, when you look at where we're at today, it's still pretty, basic.
Just Jobs, who had just been fired from Apple and was, you know, looking for stuff to do and was starting next, spent $5 million. George Lucas wanted more. And,
was it five? I haven't heard it was 10, but was it 5 million? It could have been.
Well, here's how it was 10. So this is according to Wikipedia. Jobs, who had recently been fired for Apple, is now CEO of Next, paid $5 million of his own money to George Lucas for technology rights. And Lucas wanted more, but he couldn't find anybody else to buy it. And invested $5 million as capital into the company. So it cost Steve a total of 10.
Right.
And boy, that was a good... I don't know what he. I don't know what they sold it to Disney for, but you know, it was more than $10 million.
When he started Next, I heard this story that when he started Next, he went to Cray, and he actually went He's the only person that's ever gone to the Cray headquarters to buy a Cray computer. And someone told Seymour Cray that he was in that Steve Jobs is in the lobby. He wants to buy a Cray. And he said, why does he want to buy a Cray? You know, like, he was like, you know, he started Apple. I don't understand. And the guy said, because he wants to design his next computer on a Cray.
Wow.
And Seymour said, well, that's pretty funny because I designed the Cray on a Mac.
Well, I didn't hear that. That's a great story. I love it. Andy, you wanted to say something. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying, I was just going to ask, wasn't it Lucas's sale also kind of predicated by the fact that he was going through a divorce and needed cash?
He needed the cash.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Eventually, that $10 million investment 10 years later was turned into a sale to Disney for $7.4 billion in Disney stock, making the Jobs family the number one Disney stockholder.
That's more than 2% interest.
7%.
Yeah, 7%. That's right. Largest shareholder. Yeah. Nice. Nice work. But we started this with Tim Cook. What was his involvement at Pixar?
None. Maybe he helped direct the salespeople who sold them a few Macs over the years.
Maybe.
I think the sales team is in ops.
When did he come to Apple? And how did that come about?
The year, but he was at Compaq and he came to Apple to run. He had done really well with supply chain. And Tim Cook's the kind of guy who would, you know, pre-buy all the capacity for shipping product from China. And then Dell would show up 3 days before they need it and go, what do you mean there's no planes? He really revolutionized what was already a revolution in computer logistics.
Yeah, it was one of the many reasons why you don't find like Macs and other like Apple products on discount is because they get that calculated to such precision, and they get that manufacturing line running so smoothly that they almost build to need. They're not in the position they used to be in, or what a lot of other companies are still in right now, where they have to make a bad guess and then make way more than they could possibly need, or make way less than they can sell, and either be stuck with too much inventory or be stuck with people who are now going to go buy one of 14 alternatives to whatever Dell or whatever HP or whatever late Compaq.
They call it just-in-time manufacturing, right?
Yeah.
Cook was actually, after leaving Auburn, because he's a big War Eagle guy.
Go War Eagles!
War Eagle! he spent 12 years at IBM in the PC business. Director, eventually, of North American Fulfillment. Got an MBA from Duke. He was only at Compaq for 6 months. He tells the story of how he got hired. This was in a commencement speech at Auburn. Any purely rational... I love this. This is very Tim Cook. This is Tim Cook. Any purely rational consideration of cost and benefits lined up in Compaq's favor. And the people who knew me best advised me to stay at Compaq. On that day in early 1998, I listened to my intuition, not the left side of my brain, or for that matter, even the people who knew me best. No more than 5 minutes into my initial interview with Steve, I wanted to throw caution and logic to the wind and join Apple. That's how good a salesman Steve is.
If you want to sell beige boxes all your life, you come with me and dent the universe.
My intuition already knew that joining Apple was once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to work for the creative genius and be on the executive team that could resurrect a great American company. This is Jobs on his return to Apple. You know, I wanted to do a series of interviews, How Steve Hired Me.
Oh.
Because we just talked to Bill Atkinson. You know, we did a two-part triangulation with Bill Atkinson. Who, you know, was responsible for QuickDraw on and much of the Lisa operating system, Mac Paint on the Mac, HyperCard, later Magic Cap. And Bill said, Steve, this was when Apple was 30 people, and Bill Atkinson was a neuroscientist working on his PhD in Washington State. And Jeff Raskin, who he'd worked with briefly, said, you got to come down and see what we're doing at Apple. So, you know, Bill said, I am this close to a doctorate. I've been 11 years getting this. I'm going to finish my doctorate. I'm not interested. He said, look, I'll pay your plane ticket, Raskin said. No obligation, no strings. Just come down. Steve Jobs spent a whole day with him. He says, I don't know what Steve saw in me. But for whatever reason, Steve spent the whole day with me. And he said, the thing that convinced me was he said, you know, the technology you use today is 2 years old, was invented 2 years ago. You want to start seeing what's going to come 2 years from now. You need to come work here. He said it's the difference between surfing at the front edge of the wave and dog paddling behind the wave. Don't you want to surf the front edge of the wave? And Atkinson said, yep, that's it. No PhD for me. Same thing, basically, as Tim Cook. Like, whatever it was, that magic dust that Steve Jobs sprinkled. I would love to do a series of interviews with people. How Steve hired me. And, of course, you're referring, Rene Ritchie, to the famous quote that when he hired John Sculley. Same thing. He walked around the campus, harangued him all day, brings him up on the roof of Apple and you know, says, look out here at Silicon Valley. Now, do you want to spend the rest of your life selling sugared water? Or do you want to change
to kids?
Or do you want to change the world?
The one thing that every meeting that I've heard of that, you know, people talk about Steve being in, you know, selling. One of the things it seems like he's really good at is his sell tactic seems to be, do you want to stay in the crappy place that you are or come with me? It was never like this is all great and you're doing great too, or you know, it was always there was a little bit of, you know, gaslighting, you know, just like you're in a horrible place,
right?
And I can help you.
Didn't always work.
Fix this for you.
So Atkinson tells the second half of that. Steve has been fired. He's starting next. Bill Atkinson's writing HyperCard. Steve says, "You got to come with me. You can't stay at this crap shack with Scully. Come to me. We're going to change the world at Next." And this time, Atkinson said, no, I'm going to finish HyperCard. Steve says, well, if you were my friend, if you were really my friend, you'd come with me to Next. And Atkinson says, well, if you were really my friend, you'd let me finish HyperCard. And he said, we didn't talk for years after that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Isn't that it? So it doesn't always work.
Right.
Anyway, Tim Cook, we were saying, I'm sorry, we really got way down memory lane on this. Tell us about your article.
So it's just, they're both very products of Apple. Steve Jobs built Apple and Tim Cook really became Apple, but they go about similar things in very different ways. I think one of the most profound ways is that Apple always did, you know, charity work, and Apple always did a bunch of things to try to make their employees better, to make the world better. But Steve Jobs always believed in never pimping your karma. You don't talk about it. It's not dignified to talk about it. Where Tim Cook, who's a big fan of Martin Luther King, he tweeted about it today, of Robert Kennedy Jr., he believes that you have to pave that golden path and you can inspire others by what you do. And he's really taken Apple in a direction where they are very public about their relief efforts, their charitable efforts, their matching donations, and about civil rights, civil liberties, equal opportunity, all of those things. He's become, and some people really don't like this aspect of him, and other people think it's the absolute best aspect of him. But he has become a champion not just for Apple, but for Apple's ability to influence and help shape the world.
Well, and very famously, the first big company CEO to come out.
Yeah. In his own editorial, too.
Yeah. He wasn't outed. He
was on his terms.
On his terms. And bravo, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And a staunch advocate for privacy.
I get the impression, and I get the impression that he did that for other gays that at the time it was a very hard time, you know, for the gay population. So I think that when he came out, it was really in support of them more than something he needed to do.
Yeah. No, I got that sense too. It was kind of a crisis time. There were a lot of hate crimes, suicides.
Right. And I think he
was
did
part
it
of the
had,
"It Gets Better" movement. I think.
Yep.
Yeah. I got that sense too. He's very private. He didn't want to talk about it, but he felt like, you know what, I have to at this point. I have to say something.
Yeah, he had felt a tremendous responsibility, quote unquote, to come out as gay.
Yeah. So has he been? Here's the real question I think Apple fans and lovers and haters ask. Has he been a good successor to Jobs, particularly in the vision thing?
He doesn't. Well, so Jobs was one-dimensional as well. Like Jobs was an amazing product visionary, but he didn't actually make the products. He had to depend on a wide variety of people, from Johnny Ive to help him design them to Tim Cook. Like that old statement about, yeah, you know, Steve Jobs helped dream up the iPad, but Tim Cook is the reason why it sells for $500. He had all these people, from Phil Schiller to Eddie Q, to Bob Mansfield helping and supporting him. Tim Cook doesn't do what Steve Jobs did, but Steve Jobs didn't do what Tim Cook did. Tim Cook had to assemble around him existing and new people who would help him be as well-rounded as Steve Jobs was, each in their own niche.
I think in a lot of ways it sets Apple up for the growth that it's had. I think Apple wouldn't be where it was if Steve didn't get it there with the innovation, with the hard push, with the vision. But for it, and this is very typical for companies, is that you start at a, the innovator pushes it to some certain degree, but then you need someone who's going to manage that growth, you know, past that. And I think that handoff, I think he's doing a lot of things that Steve wouldn't have done. And I think that all of those things are things that are helping the company grow, you know, and it's amazing when you think about Apple's value in the last week or whatever has gone up, or maybe the last 2 weeks, $5 billion. I mean, that's a really good business. billion now is represented on the stock market as 0.05.
Yeah.
You know, like 5 billion is 0.05, yeah. 1.05 trillion.
But then, if you were going to say what the differences were between Jobs and Cook, it would be exactly that, right? The Jobs came up with new products that really inspired. Some of them were hits. Most of them were hits. Some of them were flops. And that Cook has really been a good custodian by taking what Steve did and making it, better, faster, but incrementally.
But also like AirPods, I think AirPods is probably one of the better products Apple's done, including recent Jobs era products. It may not be as consistent, and it may be, like I said, normalized, but there are still some fundamentally great technologies coming out of Apple.
Yeah. This is the stock graph my dad sent me. he said, right about here, you said, oh, yeah, Tim Cook's taken over. You should get rid of that Apple stock. Right about there, and then... I should just say, yeah, you're right, Dad. Of course,
no one hurts you like family, Leo.
Well, I've never owned Apple stock. I've not, except I guess I suppose it's in some of my index funds. But I don't pay attention.
Well, but look, it wasn't stupid advice. Look at that graph. If he had sold, and he could have sold at that peak, sold at that peak, knowing that there's going to be a drop, then buy it back at a discount, and then kept.
That's
a bunch
what
of money.
I meant. That's what I meant. Oh well. How is it, now? Tim is what? He's a little younger than me, so I think he's 56, 57.
I'm like that, yeah.
That means he's going to be around a little longer. Is Apple at all thinking about his replacement?
I mean, you look at some of the lists people put out, and it's basically everybody on the executive page. So I believe his original agreement with Apple was for 10 years, and that takes him to 2021. And he might well want to keep doing it. He looks like someone who loves what he does and believes that they really can affect change on a global scale. And that's a very unique position. Sorry, very unique doesn't exist. That's a unique position to be in.
Man,
in
you're
world.
A writer, aren't you?
he's an editor.
He's an editor, even more important.
and there's very few people who can do that. And you look at Apple and they have to be prepared. You never know what's going to happen today, tomorrow, in the future. I remember, this is a ludicrous story, but I'm going to tell it. I arrived at the airport and I got an Uber, and the person driving said, are you here for the Apple event? And I said, yeah. And they said, well, I used to work for Tim Cook. I'm like, really? Yeah, I reported directly to Tim Cook for years, but then Apple moved manufacturing to China, so I decided to retire. I got bored, so now I'm driving an Uber. And they proceeded to tell me all these stories, but they're like, I remember when Steve Jobs made Tim Cook go spend time in marketing. And he's like, you're going to run this company one day. You have to spend time in marketing. He's like, I don't want to. I like my numbers. And he's like, no, you have to learn the complete business.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
And I think you see that now. Like Jeff Williams is running Apple Watch, and that means he has to understand Apple from a complete product point of view. And he's, you know, a legitimate successor of Apple. And Angela Ahrens is turning Apple Store into a product. And they're talking about, they're discussing it like it's a product. And she has to learn how all those aspects. And she's another legitimate contender. So I think they go through those grooming processes. And it's his obligation to the board of directors to make sure there is a line of succession if anything were to, you know, any tragedy were to strike. But, you know, I think if he had his druthers, he'd be there for a while yet.
It's no surprise you said that he didn't like marketing. If there's the one thing that you don't think of Tim Cook in is marketing. You think of him as numbers guy, ops guy.
Well, they said that they would give him numbers from spreadsheets. He'd say, no, that's incorrect. The number you gave me 3 months ago was this instead from his memory.
Yeah, of course. But I don't mind that. I'm not a marketing. I don't like marketing either. So I think that's fine. And he does have Johnny Ive, although you get the feeling Johnny's not that involved these days in day-to-day operations. Do you have any sense of that at all?
People still present. I still know people who got to present to him, and they still got to present to Johnny.
Oh, boy.
And you look at things like you know, there's stories about him going over the promotion display and the iPads over and over again.
Oh, okay.
And worrying about Apple Pencil and changing changing the material of the pin at the pen at the last minute and all those sort of things.
It's kind of interesting. I didn't realize this, but they got a design patent for the Steve Jobs theater. The exterior is patented. This is recent. Just happened. It's for the above ground glass building. The patent. Let me see if I can find this is from Patently Apple. Let me see if I can find the language of the patent. Actually got 67 patents on August 28th. That's today. Covering the theater, quantum dot technology, and 3D sensing for the true depth camera. Wow. But this is the patent image for the Steve Jobs theater. Oh, maybe it has to do with that carbon fiber roof, right?
Well, I mean, that's well and good and all. But, I mean, what protection does a patent actually deliver? Because you know that like one of the first four Samsung's of those that they sell is going to be bought by someone in China. They're going to make their own patterns, make their own tooling, and then start punching out these Steve Jobs theaters. You'll be able to buy it at Target for like $18.
All over the place. I love it. Well, anyway, happy 7th anniversary, Tim, and I guess we owe him a thank you. I mean, you point out in your article there are a few things a few areas where Tim, under Tim's guidance, Apple has not done so well. We don't have to belabor those,
it's just scaling is hard. I mean, the scale of Apple is so much bigger now than it's ever been, and really, it's the same kind of team, so something has to give.
And no it's company is 100%, you know, as it bats 1,000. That's not, you know, it's not doable.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, look at the difference, like Renee says, look at the difference between Apple then and Apple now. Right now, Apple Steve was not running Apple at a time where a tech company could have the power of a nation state. And now that's the situation with Apple and Google and Facebook. And Apple now has the ability. They're not just a hardware maker. They can project influence and project power. And now they're in a position where you really can't have a CEO that has the sort of reputation of unpredictability as Steve had. Like, look at what's happening with Elon Musk these days, where there's a lot of lack of confidence based on the fact that he's basically being a very passionate, very expressive individual, whereas Tim Cook is the person who will absolutely cut you, man, just by simply leaning back in his chair and folding his arms and pursing his lips slightly and looking at you until you just want to die. And that's his version of going into attack mode. He is the person that is calm. He's smooth. He's the person that can do things like, again, not only come out as a gay man, but also make sure that that's done in such a way that the importance of that move is well expressed and well taken. He's the person that can protest immigration laws, changes in immigration laws, without seeming like he's just flying off the handle and going on a Twitter rant. And so that's the sort of person that needs to be in the CEO chair when Apple reaches this kind of state. And he's only 57. If he stays healthy, they could. I mean, you talk about 75 before you start to maybe ask Grandpa to retake his driving test just in case. And he's not the sort of person who's going to get ants in his pants. That's the only thing that's I don't think it's a problem, but the only thing that is an interesting point of debate is how many vice presidents are willing to wait 5 years, 10 years, 15 years without wanting to say, well, I want to basically I want the ability to steer my own company and design and make my vision of what a company should be, what it should do, and what its responsibilities are. I want to be that kind of creator. I don't want to be the person who simply has to always have conversations with somebody who's actually the head person. So that's it. Retention is going to be interesting beyond the legendary the people who have always been at the core of Apple for the past 10 years. How are the new people going to get along? Are they going to feel like they got a shot at the moon landing, or are they feel like they're being pushed over to where maybe you're going to do like a space station in 1975, 76, 77. Why don't you hang around just in case we do that?
It's interesting. You mentioned the Elon Musk's troubles. One of the things Apple under Cook seems to be doing is stepping up its self-driving car project, Project Titan. And according to Apple Insider, they've stepped up their poaching activities, taking more Tesla employees over the last few months, not just in self-driving cars. A lot of them, though, are going to Project Titan.
You got to think a lot of people are rethinking their commitment to Tesla, given what he was talking
It's an opportunity.
No, but they're founder-based companies, and there's a lot of cult of personality in those, and you want to go to a place where you think you're going to make the next product that changes the world. And when you start to think that maybe that's not where you're, you know, that's not what their company's headed, you start looking for your options.
I love the...
But in addition to that, Apple is well... For a project that is as speculative as self-driving cars, and as much as we love those little tech demos, I don't think that they're anywhere near... delivering what we think they're supposed to deliver. Apple is sitting on so much money they can keep bankrolling. If you sign on to Apple's self-driving project, you know that they've got enough money that so long as Apple maintains an interest in developing this, you got a job and you can keep experimenting and developing and encountering immovable objects and finding a way to battle through them, while not actually having a product that's making any money for anybody. Whereas Tesla is in a position where they don't have anywhere near the war chest of Apple. They don't have the ability to keep something flying if it's not making money. And now because they're actually selling cars, they have the responsibility of manufacturing all the cars that are being bought and making sure that they get into the supply line. It's really wonderful to be able to be in the position of designing and making your money off of just clouds of air, which is what Apple's car people get to do. Whereas if you work for Tesla, you're going to get like a fraction of the money and you're going to be asked, why is it that when it rained and someone encountered a stoplight that was a little too orange instead of green, it did the wrong thing and still make money for the company?
Yeah, it's like Palm and BlackBerry didn't have ancillary businesses, but Samsung and Microsoft and Apple could use their computer and appliance and office business to fund the next generation of products.
Yeah, and I think that the Tesla production pipeline seems a little bit more off the cuff than the Apple production.
We should
pipeline.
Say that I mean, Tesla, Apple has its own issues. Tesla denies that more people are leaving for Apple than before. And they've often called Apple the Tesla graveyard, that the employees that Apple's stealing from Tesla are the ones they didn't want anyway. So I don't know what Tesla disagrees. But I think you're right for all those reasons. What I find, the reason I think it's an interesting data point is not a commentary on Tesla, but more that Apple seems to be back working hard on Project Titan. I mean, for a while.
Well, it's the other way around, right? Yeah. Everyone was leaving Apple for Tesla for a while.
Yeah, for a while, because Apple said, we're not going to do a self-driving car. Are they now doing a self-driving car? What is going on?
They were never not doing a self-driving car. What happens is you always have an executive sponsor on a product. There's a special projects group, and they do a bunch of different things. They have AR projects and self-driving car projects and projects that aren't really public yet. And they have an executive who sort of oversees those and presents, you know, they present up the chain until they get a green light or a red light. And it's this whole complicated thing. But Dan Riccio was in charge of Project Titan. And there were a lot of people involved, and they had a lot of very big ideas. And some of the ideas they had, you know, that could have been transformative. I really believe they could have been the next generation of computing, but that was beyond the scope of the project. And when that starts to happen, maybe you have a chance of getting the future, but you start to lose the present. And so Apple, in one of their reviews, and they have reviews all the time, decided that they had to refactor the project. And Dan Riccio stepped aside because they're all way overworked. He's got the Mac and all the hardware engineering and everything he's working on. And Bob Mansfield, I almost called him Big Bob, but Bob Mansfield came back. He left Apple to spend more time with his money. So he and his family could spend more time with his money, but he's always been coming back and forth to consult. And he came on to sort of strip Titan down to its bones again and to get to the most important essential things. And instead of starting to make everything over from whole cloth, they brought on people like, I'm blanking on his last name, Dan from QNX, Dan Dodge from QNX, right. And he's now running software there. And, you know, they have a bunch of people who are running hardware now. Doug Field is another one of them. Really bringing it back to autonomous technology and the exploration of production vehicles. So it sort of had a reset, But there's so much involved, and we're seeing that when you look at what's happening with ARKit. In order to have autonomous technology, it has to ingest and understand images, and we get to benefit from that with ARKit right now. But in the long haul, it's like, to Andy's point, it's got to understand what's a wall and what's rain. Those are incredibly complicated computing projects and machine learning projects and AI projects, and we'll get sort of the ancillary technologies for a while. And then if Apple can productize it, that's great. If they can't, it like joins the television set in the lab. Very expensive lab, but Apple's got billions of dollars.
Yeah, so someone in their house has a 36-inch TV that costs $1.8 million. So hopefully they're enjoying it. But it's what I thought was really interesting about these reports is that they're not just it makes absolute sense for Apple to be poaching people who are working in the AI parts of it, the vision part of it, the processing parts of it, all the stuff that can be it's basic research that can be applied to almost anything that Apple's trying to do. I thought it was interesting though that they're also poaching people who are into auto manufacturing, because it does right now it doesn't seem at all assured that if you want to make a killing in autonomous car technology, that you want to actually make cars. That what you would actually want to do is let Ford and GM make cars and sell them the software, would Johnny Ive, if you're telling them that we're going to be selling boxes that are going to be installed inside like engine bays that will never be seen, are they still going to make it like, well, we've got this new shade of ultra green and we have this notch in it that also has an aquamarine hue to it, but yeah, it's going to be inside an engine compartment. Are you going to build an entire car? Are you going to get an entire car certified, or are you just going to be selling people electrons? Electrons are a lot. There's a lot of them out there.
There's one school of thought that you have to do hardware and software. Tesla's always said this. You have to do it all. You can't do effective software if you're not making the hardware. To that point, Toyota just invested $500 million in Uber. Giving it a market valuation, by the way, of $72 billion. That's not because of ride sharing. That's because of self-driving cars, I'm sure.
You could imagine the Apple shuttles being autonomous before like an Apple car service comes out, for example.
I think part of what the reset was, with no insider information or anything else, I just think part of the reset was, are people really going to be driving the car? So if you're going to create something for the future and you're building it in 2023 or 2025, the more I think about autonomous cars and the more I sit in the back of, Ubers and Lyfts and everything else, the more I think that the future is not going to be, if you're building something that's not coming out until 2025, you're going to build it without a steering wheel. Like you're going to tell people what you're going to get in, and you may still own it, but you're not interested.
That's what Google has been saying all along.
Yep. They're right.
But it's super difficult. I don't know if any of you read that really great article about Waymo, testing they're doing in open rows in Arizona right now, by the posted on theinformation.com. But they're really getting it. It really does a great job of explaining the problems of we've got this thing working on the Google campus. That's awesome. But once you put it in the lions and the tigers of actual traffic, you realize that how complicated the process of driving a car is. And one of the most important passages was making us remember how much, when we're behind the wheel of the car, so many of our decisions are based on experience and intuition. The ability to say that how many times have I avoided an accident for myself and other people by saying, okay, that guy in the Mustang is an absolute jack whatever. he's an idiot. He's an unsafe driver. He's going to need like a big like 8-car length space to leap into when he realizes he's about to crash into a truck that's stopping short in front of him. So I'm going to open up a big gap in front of me, and sure enough, at some point he leans a truck taps its brakes a little bit. He has to leap into safety, and it's the ability to as one of the examples I put into there is the ability to look at pedestrians waiting at the side of the street and saying, okay, here is like a middle-aged couple and here are four teenagers, and intuiting that the teenagers are more likely to jaywalk than the couple is, and factoring that in your decision making. So that's why I'm saying that everyone I've talked to about autonomous vehicles underscores that this is so far away from doing. If we're expecting a car to go on the road and do everything that a driver does with the same measure of safety, we're still so far away, and we really need a big leap before we can actually crack that.
Never mind the snow.
Number one is I still think the easy solution is to the first solution is to move to highways. You know, like that's where you really don't want to drive. is just, you know, I know Waymo works on the other side of that, but when you get on the highway, you get into a car, you know, that's a much more predictable environment. And I do think the offset between all those intuitive things that we do are the fact that we're talking on our phone, even if it's hands-free while we're eating a Big Mac and, you know, thinking about other things. There's a lot of, I think that the autonomous cars, you know, and Warren Buffett's already talked about the fact that, you know, one of the risk factors that he's talking about in the future is specifically that he's concerned that Geico will make less money because of this auto driving cars, because they're going to be a lot safer. I mean, they really are. I mean, when we start looking at how crazy humans are at driving.
The paragraph from Amir Afradi's article today about Waymo's big ambitions slowed by tech trouble. You tell me if this is tech trouble or human trouble. 2 weeks ago, Lisa Hargis, an administrative assistant who works in an office a stone's throw away from Waymo's vehicle depot, said she nearly hit a Waymo Chrysler Pacifica minivan because it stopped abruptly while making a right turn at the intersection. "Go!" she shouted angrily. She said, after getting stuck in the intersection midway through her left turn. Cars that had been driving behind the Waymo van also stopped. "I was going to murder someone," she said.
Yeah.
Human error or Waymo error?
Again, psychology is going to factor into this. Yeah. So one of the quote problems unquote is that Waymo vans, when there's a stop sign, they stop for 3 seconds. And most people are like, well, so long as I slow down, so long as I tap the brakes while cruising through this intersection, that's fine. And so people get very annoyed by that. And you're going to have a problem where when people recognize that the car in front of them is an autonomous vehicle, specifically it's a Waymo car, they're going to think, oh, my, every single prejudice they might have against elderly drivers is going to say, well, I'm going to just simply go cross the double yellow line, go around it and take my right turn around this car. Partly because I know that I don't want to be stuck behind this Waymo car, but also because I know that the Waymo software is such a wimp that it's going to put on its own brakes and let me go around it to prevent a crash from happening. And part of the psychology is knowing that you are not having combat with another human driver. You are gaming the system and putting one over on a machine. So there's a lot of this we're not going to find out about until we have hundreds of thousands of autonomous vehicles on the road. We're going to have to look at the first 1,000 terrible accidents very, very carefully before we figure out how to actually make this into a real product.
Let's take a break because we've been avoiding really the topic, of course, of the Apple event and all that stuff. We'll get to that.
What? There's an Apple event?
What? We'll get to that in a second. I'm hoping if I take a long enough time, you'll get your invitation, and then we can say with certainty when the event is. Our show today brought to you by, literally, CashFly. All of our audio, all of our video, when you download it, comes to you from CashFly. Petabytes of data every month, literally. And never a hitch, right? When you subscribe to our podcast, they just appear on your phone. They just appear automatically. And it's all coming from CashFly. It's a contact delivery network, a CDN. And if you use a CDN, you know that the 3 a.m. frantic phone calls that your CDN is out are not a good thing. And if the tech support's unreliable, every second your site is down is money lost on your watch. You need a CDN that works. You need CashFly. CashFly's been building trusted CDN relationships since 2002. We've been using them since 2005 or 6, I want to say. No more outages. 100% availability with their bulletproof 100% SLA and a great team. We talk to them often of smart, easy to talk to, agile techs, and they can answer your question. I love this without having to pass you around. They can answer it the first time. If you're in software, if you're a podcaster, any other business that relies on having data readily available to your customers, you don't know what your bandwidth consumption is going to be. And it's frustrating when a company will lock you into a contract that's not flexible, not built around your unique patterns of demand and traffic. Make this the last month your CDN bill gives you a headache. Say goodbye to logging in every day, trying to track your usage so you know what the bill's going to be at the end of the month. On average, customers who switch to CashFly save more than 20%. We honestly, Twit wouldn't exist if it weren't for CashFly. We couldn't afford those other guys. Just imagine what you could do with that 20% with your time when you don't have to micromanage your usage or worry about having to commit to a long-term contract. Don't buy CDNs that way. Go to CashFly. They're a reliable network. They're great prices. We rely on them. We have for more than a decade. You should too. And we have a special offer for you. CashFly is giving away a complimentary detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends. Let them take a look at it and tell you if they can save you 20% or more. Why leave it on the table? Go to twit.cashfly.com and learn more. twit.cashfly.com. Thank you, CashFly.
We've used them for a long time as well. And
yeah.
It's hard to crash them. In fact, it's impossible. Like I did get a call from Matt one time, said, you're moving a gig a second.
Matt Levine is one of the founders. And yeah. He's been our champion. He came to me, must be 2005, 2006, and said, we'd like to host your content. And you know what? It was just audio then. And then a few years later, we say, Matt, we'd like to also offer gigabyte-sized video files. And he said, no problem. He's always been great.
He's been great.
Really love CashFly. And in all honesty, this would not exist if it weren't for CashFly. So if you're looking for a CDN, do them a favor, dude, because they did us a big favor. CashFly. Twit.cashfly.com. All right. Enough. We got to talk about Ming-Chi Kuo. He's backing down on the Apple Pencil rumor. No.
Dang it.
No pencil support for 2018 iPhones.
He's let us down. It was Trendforce.
They're fighting, huh?
Trendforce said the rumor. Then I couldn't tell if the China Daily was just regurgitating it or corroborating it. And now Ming-Chi Kuo says, no, stop it, both of you.
He also says, and I don't know if this is something to worry about, that the 6.1-inch model, that's the little cheap one. No, it won't be cheap, but the little less expensive one, has been reportedly plagued by production issues and will be available slightly later due to its production schedule. We heard that about the iPhone X, and it didn't really come true, right?
iPhone X shipped on November 2nd.
Oh, okay. So it was a little later.
Yeah. But, I mean, they announced it up front. It wasn't like they said, oh, it's coming today, and then, oops, sorry.
Right. There'll be the – I think we all kind of know roughly the outline of what Apple will be talking about. Probably September 12th. We've gone through that calendaring thing. And there continue to be data points bolstering that. A German telecom that said you'll be able to order your iPhone September 14th. And another one that said deliveries begin September 21st. And so I think there's, you know, corroborating evidence that it'll be September 12th for the announcement. Three phones, the 6.1-inch LCD, the less expensive phone, basically an iPhone 8. Some rumors say iPhone 9. They'll call it iPhone 9. I don't know. I think the latest from Gurman is, hold on that iPhone XS or XS.
it's hard to predict because Apple literally has a name they think about. They put it on a list. Then they think of 300 other names. They try to see if any of those names are better. Right. If they're not, they stick with the one they first thought. If they are better, they switch to them. There's a persistent rumor that the MacBook was going to be called the MacBook Stealth, and they decided, no, that's just silly, and went with MacBook.
You could see it. As long as you
can make the box in time, they can make anything they want.
Yeah, I mean, what does it matter what it's called? But that's
on Mother of Dragons.
Partly because there's not a lot to be said about the rest of it. We know two OLEDs, 6.5 inches and 5.8 inches. Basically, an iPhone 8 next generation, that'll be an LCD. An iPhone 10 next generation, very similar to the iPhone 10. And then a supersized 10 Plus, that'll be 6.5 inches.
Impresses me is like Apple Display, they don't get enough credit. Like a lot of people just say, oh, it's, you know, Samsung made the AMOLED panels. But Apple, they went to all the work of bending it backwards and plugging it in so you'd get rid of the chin of the phone. And most companies now are doing like these massive notches but still putting the chin on the phone. And Apple's about to release an LED phone that now bends backwards and gets rid of the chin. Just like from a hardware engineering point of view, especially an Apple Display team point of view, they're doing fascinating work with all of these pixels.
Yeah, but that's I'm still kind of ambivalent about the cheeks, the chins, and the and all these other things.
The cheeks at and some the chins.
Point, I mean, at some point, you need to. You're not worried about finger touches interfering with the size of the phone because they have rejection algorithms for that. But at some point, you have to. How are you going to at sometimes you find yourself I find myself sort of like juggling this phone somewhere around my hand because my finger my the edge of the screen is invisible because my the pad of my thumb is a little bit too close to the edge of the screen. It's kind of nice to have a little free space that doesn't belong to anybody. It's just there for my comfort and not to have to keep scrolling because there's one line of text or one letter that I don't know where it is. So I just think that it's a design choice. I don't think it's mandatory to have bezels as small as possible. I think that you make a choice on what's going to work best for the user, what's going to work best for that form factor. And you don't go to bezel-less displays simply because everybody else is doing it.
It's a notch that kills me. The notch and the chin, Andy. Like I can take
no
a notch.
No reason to have both.
It's the notch. Yeah, the notch one. And the chin. It just seems like you're doing the notch because you want to.
Yeah, point. You don't need it. Just make the chin smaller.
Or do what Samsung does. Samsung is great. You got an eyebrow and a chin. You're fine. Yeah,
that's fine. Let's see. Because we are so close to the release date, it's reasonable that the supply chain leaks would be fairly accurate, right?
Yeah, this is about the time where when I hear rumors, I'm not going to believe any rumor automatically. But if you give me if someone shows me a picture of something that doesn't make any sense to be a picture of an iPhone, I will not dismiss it quite as quickly because we are now in the zone where there are enough people in on the secret that it can no longer be termed a secret.
This is the is this Ming-Chi Kuo's chart. This is, I guess, all the specs. A12. So even the smaller iPhone will have the modern chip, right? A12.
That's consistent with what they've done in the past. Yeah. Like the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10 had the same processor.
3 gigs of RAM on the iPhone 9. I'll call it the iPhone 9. 4 gigs in the two iPhone 10s.
Benjamin Mayo noted something really interesting on Twitter today that you have basically a much lower resolution on the 6.1. That's essentially 2x, which is Apple's Retina display resolution, and the exact same thing for the 6.5-inch, but at 3x. So they're keeping the same point size, but you get twice density on the 6.1 and thrice density on the 6.5 for the OLED.
What is X? What does X represent?
So the original iPhone had one pixel equaled 1 point.
That's
when they
went
to the Retina display. Okay. There was 2x, which meant that 4 pixels made 1 point. And then when you went to, I think it was the iPhone, I forget which one went to 3x first. It might have been the iPhone 10, but then you had 9 pixels for every point. And that's going to be the same thing on the OLED iPhones, but the lower priced iPhone, because it's a lower priced iPhone, is only getting 2. You'll be able to visually slightly less distinguish the pixels.
single camera on the smaller one and dual camera on the.
Yeah.
Top two, that makes sense. Aluminum instead of stainless steel frame for the LCD version, and colors on the LCD version. That's actually the newest rumor.
It's for the
Apple
kids.
Chromatic.
Well, yeah. Does that include the aluminum frame, like an anodized aluminum frame, or does that just the back?
We'll have to see.
Don't know.
They can anodize aluminum. Yeah, I mean, they've shown that they could do it with iPods and with other things.
Is it a return to the 5C?
The 5C was interesting. Like Apple, the iPhone was this blockbuster movie that they had once a year that everyone would rush to get and then it would taper off for the rest of the year. But iPod wasn't like that. They'd have a bit of a surge, but people would buy iPod. They were on the shelves in this clear packaging and they'd be fun and you could see them and you'd buy them whenever you wanted to. And I think the 5C was, they're almost like TV series where you watch them throughout the year. And I think the 5C was an attempt to make the iPhone more mainstream, more programmatic, where it even had packaging like an iPod and it just didn't work. And now because they're making this very specifically, like it's a large phone. It's not smaller than the iPhone 10. It's bigger than the iPhone 10. And that really sounds to me like a product destined for the Asian markets especially, but also people who just want a primary computing device that's not that expensive. And rumors are that this might be down like at $550, which sounds like a lot of money still. But when you amortize that over a standard 0% leasing agreement, which is what a lot of the carriers in the U.S. and other places do now, it's much lower than previous quote-unquote new iPhones. It becomes another attempt to sort of make that mainstream product that you could sell year-round.
What else? I think I feel like we. This is like there. This we.
There's the camera. The camera is like always one of the best. And I don't know if it's ready or not yet, but there's been rumors for a while that Apple's working on a next generation AR camera that has
for the back.
Yeah, for the because right now, if you look at iOS 12, the AR camera is on the front. It's in Messages and it's in FaceTime. It's not in the camera app.
Right.
And that might be because the new camera hasn't been announced yet. And whether it's this year or next year, I think they're really working towards a camera system that's as fun on the back, where I can like point my camera at Leo and Andy and Alex and give them little hats and little animals and little the Velociraptor nips at your toes and does all sorts of
woo-hoo,
I'm going to be very upset if nobody can see my own selected little hat. Because you decided to impose your own little hat upon me. I just don't think that's right, Renee.
The data, like Alex has talked about this before, but the depth data you get off the iPhone 10 and 8 camera right now with iOS 12 is remarkable. And if it's better than that, it opens up a lot of really interesting possibilities.
Yeah. It's also going to be really cool to see how much over-engineering will there be in this AR system. Because you got to figure that if Apple is serious about creating a wearable AR device, and they certainly are, they're nowhere close to actually building the glasses, but they can start testing the software they intend to put into it by putting increasingly more and more beefy features into iPhones and seeing exactly how these things work and see exactly where these things fail. So I really think that we're going to start to see previews of wearables in iPhone hardware.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. I think that Apple is got the right solution now. I mean, I think that the challenge that Google had is they were trying to add everything all at one time. And I think Apple has years as they work on the glasses and they work on that experience, they have years to develop the AR, develop it so that when and they have the advantage, you know, of this 75 million, you know, or more people using their newest phones, that they're going to really be able to have all the software kind of lined up when they release a pair of glasses. They're not trying to like recreate the wheel. They're just going to move that OS largely to the glasses.
iOS 12 is pretty much done too, right? We got beta 9 in the public beta last night.
How many betas?
So many betas. But that would make sense that's going to come out September 12th. They've got to put it on the phones as they're packaging them up. So they must be done now, right? What does that mean they can't ship those phones from the factory until iOS 12 is done and then they put it on the phone? They can't image the
phone?
No,
I mean,
go ahead, Renee.
Oh, go ahead, Renee.
No, I was just going to say, like, worst case scenario, there's an update the minute you open the new phone.
But not from 11 to 12. Usually...
The phone would ship with whatever the most recent build is when they have to actually press them on the factory. Right. Yeah, and then if there are any substantive, like if there are last-minute showstoppers, you open that phone up and it goes, an update's available.
You have to think that then, in that case, 12's pretty much done and they're putting it on phones. They better be putting phones on 747s now.
We'll see. That for sure will hit the rumor mill the minute there are pallets of devices arriving. That's usually after. Usually they don't do that till after the event because they don't want anything to leak, and it's hard to secure massive amounts of product being shipped.
Oh, so they're stockpiling them in Shenzhen somewhere.
Yeah. Exactly. They got to make sure that the people who show up in the first two or three weeks are going to get the phones that they want. After that, they can turn the taps down a little bit and start to get back to that sort of build on demand sort of thing.
When I buy a laptop from Apple, it's often shipped from China. Do the phones come to us from China? They do, don't they?
Yeah.
If we're the early order folk.
Yep.
Okay.
They almost always come from China, unless you go to the store to pick it up. Yeah.
Oh, so those days of like loading them onto a container on a 747.
Well, those are for retail. That's for retail availability.
Got it. Dual SIM. Who cares? Let's take a break because I want to. I mean, seriously. Good. That's nice. Sure. That's nice. I want to talk about the Apple Watch and the iPad because I think we've given that Apple Watch short shrift, and I want to know what you know about the Apple Watch coming up in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about the toothbrush I'm taking on my trip. Whip. I realized, you know, we used to use the big electric toothbrushes, and I realized now as we traveled, we'd have to pack not only the toothbrush and all that stuff, but we'd have to pack the charger. It was kind of a pain. This year, we're going to just pack the Quip because it's got a 3-month AAA battery, so I won't need a charger. It's so much more compact, and I love the adhesive strip. I could put it right on the mirror, and we're not going to, you know, we're going to be in one place for 3 weeks. We just put it right on the mirror, and there's my toothbrush. We have his and her Quips. I have silver. No, Lisa has silver. I have copper or gold. I can't remember. It's goldish. I guess it's gold. silver and gold. Quip is the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. It is awesome. Designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, more affordable, more, even more enjoyable. It is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists. And I have to say designers, too, because it's beautiful. Quip's sensitive sonic vibrations are gentle on your sensitive gums. People brush too hard. Some electric toothbrushes too abrasive. They can actually wear down enamel. They can make your gums more sensitive. Quip, it feels good. It's good for your teeth, good for your gums. And the built-in two-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds so you know when to switch sides, helping you get a full and even clean. You know, 90% of us don't even brush for a full 2 minutes. I do every time because my Quip tells me. I love the cover that goes right on the mirror there and unmounts to slide over your bristles as we travel. It's a perfect. See that in the bottom? It's a perfect travel brush. Brush heads are delivered automatically on a dentist-recommended schedule. Most people don't change their brush heads enough. Every 3 months, you'll get a new one for just $5. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the ADA and has thousands of verified five-star reviews. And best of all, it starts at $25. I bought my daughter a Quip, too. She said, I want an electric toothbrush. I said, I got you covered. Quip is backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. Starts at just $25. And if you go to GetQuip, G-E-T-Q-U-I-P, GetQuip.com/twit right now, first refill pack is free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. First refill pack free. GetQuip.com/twit. GetQuip.com/twit. They're so affordable. We actually have extras at the house for sleepovers and stuff like that. I just love our Quips. They're so pretty. GetQuip.com/twit. All right. Am I going to be buying a new Apple Watch? This is going to be very expensive September. Or is it always just like an incremental upgrade? Tell me that, please.
I mean, it depends what's important to you. It's going to be a big trend of the last 2 years. Yeah, it's deleting all the bezels. That's the thing. We want to delete all the bezels.
The bezel on this is not big.
It's a giant black ring that nobody can complete.
We want to complete our rings.
Yeah, you want to just get rid of that black.
How will this be more edge to edge? Will it actually go over the edge of the aluminum?
It'll go to the very edge. Like right now, it's an illusion because the interface is black and the glass is black and the casing is black.
Oh, you're saying the screen doesn't go to the edge.
Yeah, the display.
So it might not look that much different from the outside, but the actual display inside the glass will
be bigger. Oh. Yeah, and it'll be band. That's the important thing, Leo. It will be band compatible. Otherwise, I would be on the floor sobbing in a learned helplessness.
I was worried because I saw that a lot of the bands are no longer available. I thought, uh-oh.
No, that's the. I'm taking heart in believing that's the fall refresh. That's doing that. Not the. Suddenly we have bands that are half the width. Sorry.
Yikes. Actually, this is good news for Renee because he can now buy some new bands.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I keep saying that this is the most effective way Apple's ever found to separate me from my money.
You've now given me the band disease.
I know.
I'm reading Reddit, and there's now ways. People have so many bands, they're coming up with interesting ways to store and display them.
And there's a whole band trading community, I think, too.
That's a good idea.
I don't need this band anymore. I'll send it to you. Oh, you can send me that one. That's great.
I don't want to use somebody else's band, though.
I guess it depends on.
I'm wearing your family the Hook and Looper right now, the gray Hook and Looper. I like it.
I put on the Nike.
Oh, I love that one. Yeah.
Bone.
Yeah,
I have the one that it came with, this sports ball.
A lot of people do. I mean, they just
pretty proud put it on with it.
It's plastic.
Fluoroelastomer.
Exactly.
Fluoroelastomer. Actually, come to think of it, Hook and Looper is also plastic. It's just a different kind of plastic, right?
Yeah. You brush your teeth with fluoroelastomer.
I experimented with a bunch of them, and then I was like, I'm just going to stick with the one that I have. I didn't spend the kind of money that Renee did. If I had, I'd probably be very happy with my. But I tried a whole bunch of little ones that were anywhere from $30 to $50 or $80, and I just went back to the plastic one. I was like, I'm done.
Apple's bands are crazy overpriced, but I don't know. They're nice.
I take some comfort in knowing that the Apple Hermes are actually cheaper than the Hermes. So that's why.
Well, they're saving money. There you go.
Yeah, it's like half the. I'm like, I'm getting a Hermes for half the price. It's ridiculous.
So they're calling this the Series 4, but really that's just it. It's just the screen will be bigger inside there.
I mean, there's a lot of question marks. And what happened with the original Apple Watch is to get it out, it shipped with the S1, the system in package processor running basically at the thermal limits of the device. It had zero headroom.
Wow.
And over time, they've gotten better. And with the Series 2, the processor was much more powerful, and they were able to spend a little bit of that budget on things like always, you know, more readily available apps. And there are a lot of things I'd like to see them do, because they're going to get better battery efficiency again this year. But the screen's going to be bigger, and that takes more power. And there's things that they need to spend it on. Like, it's still a watch that most of the time is not functioning as a watch because it has no persistent time display. And I'd love to see them spend some battery, because everything in mobile is battery is the currency of mobile. Every feature you get comes when you pay for it in battery, and you can't pay for two things at the same time. You got to make choices. But I'd like to see them start making choices that enable always on display. And a lot of people want UI apps on Apple Watch, for example.
I would love an always on display. I have to say, it works fine when I'm upright. But
it's not subtle. Like, if I'm talking to you, Leo, like, you see me checking the time. I just want to be able to glance down. Oh, I know it's 4 o'clock.
And it doesn't work when you're lying down, or, you know, there's, you have to be in a certain position for it to work properly.
And the LTE is still slaved, and there's this case to be made that more independent. It's like the original Apple Watch was the shuttlecraft on the original Star Trek series, where it could barely go from the starship to the planet. And then now we have the next generation shuttlecraft, which can go into warp, but not very good warp yet. And we need to get to the point where you're in Deep Space Nine, and the shuttlecraft can basically jump all over the universe on its own.
And you'd think I'd have learned my lesson and just do what Alex does, buy the least expensive Apple Watch.
Yep.
Because there's gonna be an upgrade, but of course I always buy the most expensive Apple Watch.
Yeah, I started with that the very first one. I was like, I know this is just gonna keep getting better. I'm just gonna just ride this one,
you know,
instead of. Yeah, I just I'm not always smart, but
I like ceramic, and I like the gray ceramic because I like those.
I think the ceramic is really pretty, and
I really
want it.
It's over $1,000.
But I'm kind of like, but I'm gonna buy another one next year.
Yeah. I'm not going to buy another one this year. That's for sure. And Mr. Ming Chi says enhanced heart rate detection.
Yeah, they're getting better with those sensors. A lot of the sensors that I think people expect, things like blood sugar analysis, are still years away. Like, there's always a new startup that announces, hey, we're ready. But no, you're not ready with accuracy or scale yet, buddy.
That's
you're ready with
do.
The press release.
Yeah.
So we'll see those over time. But I think we're getting better with the ones we have for now.
Yeah. The Apple Watch is a totally different product than the iPhone or an iPad. It really is. You really can't. I don't think you can get people in based on performance, and you can't really get them in necessarily based on a larger screen. You really have to do two kind of polar opposite things. You have to take the features that they count on and make them even better. So, like things like heart rate, and also give it the ability to record other kinds of metrics outside of simple heart rate, but also just give them fashion. They don't necessarily. It's one area in which, if you suddenly come up with a red one, and it's not just a special edition, there is now an official red watch. People are going to make fun of it. Look how new innovation for 2019. Apple discovers the color red, 6,000 angstroms. Oh my God! But nonetheless, for people who want a color watch, that is a big deal. That's what moves them finally to replace a Series 1 watch with whatever is absolutely modern. So, and for I think one of the brilliant things that Apple has done is given Apple Watch a sense of focus. To know that we're not going to give you poured out all this banana oil during the product introduction about how we were creating a brand new computing paradigm and a brand new platform for software. It turns out that people just want a really cool fitness watch. They want a cool watch and they want a fitness watch, and now they've got one that's kind of both in the same way. So it's just as innovative for them to create a brand new case design or case material as it is for them to figure out how to crack $200 on this device.
Go ahead, Alex.
For me, it's a wrist available timer. I find that is the thing that I use probably more on my watch than anything else.
Yeah.
I like to make tea. Or if you're doing a French, you know, the thing is you put your phone down, especially now we have AirPods. You have no idea where your phone went. You know, you're wandering around and you're listening to whatever you're listening to. And just the fact that I can quick, boom, boom, boom. And it is transform my workout because I like to have 1.5-minute sets. And so the issue is that you now get it exactly. You're not like trying to remember what it was. You just hit the watch and you keep on working. And it's just, it just makes it so much easier. So it's, for me, even if that's all it did, it's still better than, a really good watch that I had before, Citizen. It was
so,
nice.
So long as I can say "Hey Shlomo" and have it say and have it just simply bong when my egg is done, I don't really need that. Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I do the Shlomo to my watch. See,
you don't even need the Shlomo anymore. Now you just talk to it.
Always Shlomo feature.
That's the new watch OS, right? Is that do you have that yet?
Yeah, when it detects movement, I mean, once in a while, like I'll yawn and then say Siri to something else, and the watch will pick it up because it detects movement. But I mean, like it's trying to pick up telemetry and it's trying to pick up signals, and it does this whole Bluetooth network or tries to figure out which device you actually mean to talk to based on movement and behavior and patterns and past usage and time and all these things. And once in a while, it just hilariously collapses, like the autonomous car in the snow, Leo. I mean, that's the area of technology we're in.
And I want to just murder it.
But there's a lot of potential there. When my Android Wear watch adopted like wrist gestures, and suddenly I could just if I saw that there was a notification at the very bottom, I can certainly go like that to simply read the notification without having to do this like Harry Potter sort of thing with my hand. You got to realize that this is for my making fun of that statement just a few minutes ago. This is a totally new paradigm for computing. And motion gestures they're only kind of demo interesting on phones, on a wrist device where you might have the handle of your rollaway bag in your right hand, and you just don't have you're using the tip of your nose to like activate buttons and scroll through. That's where you finally realize that this is a great motion. This is a great way to control the device. So I hope that Apple really, really starts to look into that, because it really makes a wrist device so much more interesting.
And then tell me that it's not widely understood that 3D touch will be removed from the iPhones next year.
It's not. I don't know if it's going to be removed from all of them. Apple redesigned the touch layer when they made the OLED display, because the previous touch layer used the LED backlight to measure the deformation of the glass to sort of see where you're pressing and how hard. And then they had to make an entirely new touch layer, because it turns out OLED doesn't have any LED backlighting. So they made a whole new touch layer. Now they've got a new LCD LED, but it's a new technology. It's the same technology, I believe, that LG used in the ThinQ. Mm. To keep prices down and to not have to make a whole new technology for what is probably a stopgap, lower cost iPhone, I think that the rumor is that that version won't have 3D touch.
Oh.
Yeah. Also, 3D touch is one feature that they could get rid of. There's always an argument to be made for removing 3D touch from a specific product, because it never really came through to me as a major part of the iOS experience. It was always like kind of like a shortcut, that if you don't know the shortcut, you'll still be able to use this feature just as well. If you do know the shortcut, there's going to be a certain amount of learning curve to figure out, when am I tapping, when am I touching, when am I long pressing, and when am I 3D touching, that may not be worth the ability to have to save you one tap to share a photo with somebody.
iPads. Will we see them September 12th?
I mean, if they're ready, yeah, totally. I think some years Apple does like two events. Some years Tim Cook just yells, clear my skies.
Okay. We say this every week, but I think I have to say it every week.
Delete the bezels.
Delete the bezels. 11-inch and 12.9-inch iPad Pro. It's going to be a very expensive September 12th for me, or 14th.
for the viewers and listeners, Leo. You're doing it for the kids.
Ming-Chi Kuo says new AirPods and the AirPower Pad will also come out. Does that mean that Apple will not sell an aftermarket charging case for the AirPods?
They said they would. I mean, and it's just money. It's money in the bank for them.
Right. So why wouldn't they? Yeah. All right. Let's see what else before we get to our picks of the week. Mojave also beta 9 out. Have you been using Mojave? Everybody? Anybody?
I have for everything.
I'm behind.
Me neither. I have one machine that's not, because Google Hangouts has not worked for a lot of people the audio for Google Hangouts has not worked for a lot of people since Mojave.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's something that Apple and Google could fix over the last 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could. So how are you liking it?
It's great. I don't use dark mode anywhere nearly as much as I thought I would, because no matter how cool the concept is, it feels kind of oppressive. It's during depressing. The day when I want everything to be light and bright.
Right.
But you can set it to automatically sort of transition during the day, which I like, because then at night when you're editing, you don't have the bright display in your eyes. But during the day, it doesn't feel all dark and broody.
Did you read Nellie Bowles' review of Lisa Brennan's Jobs book, which will come out later, in which the most interesting thing in the profile, Small Fry, the name of the book, comes out September 4th. Bowles says that even though Jobs was a complete jerk to Lisa, Lisa still forgives him. But the best part is maybe she doesn't completely forgive him, because she said she did inherit millions like the other kids. So that's good. He took care of her in his will, but she didn't get the whole kit and caboodle. But she says, if I did, I would have given it to Bill Gates. I'm not mad, but if I did, I would have given it to Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Oh, well, it's hard to see that as sour grapes or as a backward shot. They've cured a non-zero number of diseases.
Yes.
Let's just say that.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. First of all, she's not getting the money. Laureen gets the money, but got the money. But I just thought it was funny, that kind of gratuitous, she threw that in. If I got it, I would have given it to Bill Gates.
There was a story, and I don't mean to draw this parallel, but there was a story about this famous coach who produced a wide range of incredibly talented people, but he was known to be a complete jackass. And people just said, you know, can you be a great artist or a great coach or something and not be a very nice person? And the answer is yes. And that may or may not apply to Steve Jobs, but it was my same problem with the Aaron Sorkin movie, is that I did not need to see a movie about how terrible a father Steve Jobs is.
Right.
I needed to see a movie about how he made Next, because that was the achievement of his life.
Right.
He was never held up as a model parent. He was held up as a product visionary.
Right. I agree.
Mm. I know about this stuff, but it's not the focus of...
I'm just always amazed when someone writes a book like that, because it's like, okay, so you really don't want to have a relationship with that half of the family for the rest of your life. Like it's just, you know, you're just...
Well,
you've just decided that's not worth it.
The other part of that is that she wants to have... excuse me, this is something she's been saying in some of the interviews for this, that she wants to have a voice in that conversation, that there's a story... that she's part of Steve Jobs' story that other people have been telling. And if she's going to be a character in that story, whether she likes it or not, she should at least leave behind her version of events and what was going through her mind as things were going like that. I don't think that this certainly isn't a cash grab. She could have grabbed more cash for doing it, and she could have released it at a better time. This is not exactly a time where people are clamoring for more information about Steve Jobs. So I respect, if that is her main impulse, I certainly respect that.
New York Times a couple of weeks ago published a Times magazine that was entirely devoted to climate change, and a 30,000 word article called "Losing Earth: The Decade We Almost Stopped Climate Change." Apple joined about a half a dozen other bidders trying to acquire rights. Apple got the rights. They announced a week ago. They bought the rights to the series, and we're going to produce a show or a series of shows about it. That by itself is interesting, but what's even more interesting, because they bought it from the Times, is the Times says, New York Times, Apple has said it will start streaming its television offerings next year, when it will begin competing against Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu in earnest. A little tidbit that no one had ever heard before.
Talk about burying the lead.
Well, the lead, okay, as far as we're concerned, maybe.
But this is where the reporting is based on. The Apple has acquired this property and intends to release it. That they've got the means to report on that. Whenever I see something like a line like that, I have to ask myself, did they prosecute this part of the reporting as hard as they right. did every single other fact, okay. or did somebody who knew about the acquisition deal said, oh well, you know that Apple's going to definitely have their own movie, their own Netflix type streaming service in the future? It's kind of like when
New
John
York
Goodman
Times
is
still have fact checkers. Because that would be one where
you've
worked with fact checkers. They would call you and say, hey, you have this line in here. What's the source for that?
Don't know how that one was edited, but unless I see a source for that, or at least an explanation of the type of source, I'm willing to put a maybe on that and not say that as a. For some reason it was all over the entertainment news that John Goodman spoils that in the next season of Roseanne is dead. And you see the quote that he gave, which could be that he has seen a script and he's basically saying the plans that he knows of, or he could be simply saying, how is this going to be more interesting? I don't know. It's going to be more interesting because she's dead or something. And at some point you have to ask someone the question, the follow up, are you saying right now, sir, on the record that this character is dead? Or are you saying on the record that you have information about Apple creating a streaming service that is based around this show? So take part of it. It's like eating grapes. You take part of it, you throw away the stems.
Get your picks ready, gentlemen. We're going to the back of the book in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, Masterclass. Oh, we love Masterclass. How'd you like to learn photography from Annie Leibovitz? Or comedy writing from Judd Apatow? How to direct a movie from Ron Howard? How to cook from Gordon Ramsay? How to dunk from Stephen Curry, Martin Scorsese, Helen Mirren, R.L. Stein, Aaron Sorkin teaches screenwriting. This is Masterclass, folks, and it's amazing. In fact, I talked to these guys. I said, how did you get all these people? How did you do it? David Mamet teaches playwriting. Werner Herzog filmmaking. Gary,
the David Mamet one, by the way, is just great.
Have you watched that one?
He just, he's
amazing. So I asked him, and they said, well, you know, at first, we got a couple of people, and then they told their friends, and they told their friends. And it turns out that people like Herzog and Mamet kind of want to pass it along, pay it forward. They're actually interested in telling people how they do what they do. They don't want to keep it a secret. Now you can find out. You can learn from the best. And by the way, these classes are beautiful. Here's Hans Zimmer teaching film scoring in his studio, and they're just beautifully shot.
Yeah, I can say from a production perspective, you know, from someone who does this, they're spot on. I mean, they spared no expense on the quality of what they're doing there.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, one of my favorites. I mentioned this before. I hope you don't mind if I sound like a broken record, but it's still kind of blows my mind, by the way, there's Stephen Martin teaching comedy. That's a good one. But it blows my mind. Samuel L. Jackson teaching acting. And one of my favorite parts is, this is a scene from Pulp Fiction. And he's actually directing these actors through the scene in Pulp Fiction, you know, that diner scene at the beginning. Talking about motivation, what you're thinking of, what's going on. How would you like to learn how to act from Samuel L. Jackson? Now, wouldn't that not be awesome? These are real classes taught by the best. Malcolm Gladwell on writing. Astronaut Chris Hadfield on space exploration. What? New classes are always being added. Whether you're pursuing your passion or developing your career, or frankly, I just think this is the best TV on TV. Lisa and I will sit down and we'll watch a masterclass. It's even been featured by the Times, the New York Times, Vanity Fair, ESPN. We've been loving it. And now we can tell you, you can unlock access to every class. You don't have to choose one for a year. Unlimited access to over 35 world-class masters for one very low annual price. You got to do this now. Masterclass.com/MacBreak. And what a gift. I was going to give this to my son. Henry is 24 today. It's his 24th birthday. And he said, no, I already have it, Dad. I bought it. So I gave him something else. Masterclass.com/MacBreak. But it would be a great gift, wouldn't it? For a young person starting out in life. Bob Woodward teaches investigative journalism. Christina Aguilera teaches singing. Serena Williams teaches tennis. Masterclass. This is such a great deal. Go to masterclass.com/MacBreak. And to get that all access pass, it also would be a great gift for somebody, especially a young person starting out. It just gets them excited about life, gets me excited about life. I'm a chess player. The chance to learn how to play chess from the world champion, Garry Kasparov. Masterclass.com/MacBreak. All right, Rene Ritchie, time for your pick of the week, my friend.
So I'm going to go a little bit retro with this, and I'm going to pick Apple's leather case. I don't usually use cases on my iPhones because I like them the way Johnny Ive intended, you know, all naked and core to the universe. But the glass iPhones are slippery. They're the slipperiest phones I've had since the Nexus 4, which when you put it in the middle of a conference table, 3 minutes later, it would be on the floor. Yeah. This isn't quite so bad, but if there is any angle at all on anything, it will find that angle. And these cases, I like them. I don't know if you can see it on the thing, but the patina that they get, I've been using this one for a couple of months, and they age wonderfully. You get the brown one, it looks like Indiana Jones. You get the red one, it looks like Iron Man towards the middle of Infinity War. And a lot of the yellow one, you know, they all age sort of really, really nicely. And they're color matched every season with whatever new bands and other stuff that Apple puts out. So if you are a fan of the ensemble, the look, the outfit, you can absolutely do that. But it's just, it's very simple, it's very elegant, and it adds a little bit of friction to a device that otherwise would probably slipstream through the universe all on its own power.
They're really nice. And I've mentioned this before, but I use the Folio, Apple Folio leather case, because I like to keep my, you know, a little money, some cards and stuff, my driver's license. So if I, you know, this is basically my wallet and my iPhone. And there's something Apple does with their leather. I don't know what it is, but it not only ages well, but it's very soft, pliable. I've never found a wallet case that I can have stuff in and closes flat, but this one does.
Yes. It stays open and it closes. Yeah. It's like these two remarkable things, and I managed to do both.
And one advantage of a Folio like this is, I think it's $100. Yours is $70, is that it covers the screen.
Yes.
So it is a little more, it affords a little more protection than most cases because the screen, which is the most vulnerable part of the phone, is somewhat covered. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I did not want to buy the Apple cases.
Yeah.
But I tried dozens. And then this is the only one I've stuck with, the Folio case.
Yeah.
Thank you, Renee. Andy Anako, your pick of the week. Uh-oh. Andy is muted. Did you mute yourself, sir? Yes, sir.
That's the pick.
That's it.
Yes, I muted myself because I had to go. I've realized that I had the thing with me, but thing is, because this is a camera strap that lets you carry like two cameras like a gunslinger.
I want this.
I realized that I didn't. I should go to the next room and get two cameras to put in there.
This is like a baby Bjorn for your camera.
Kind of like that. It is more like a gunslinger sort of thing. This one is the Black Rapid Double Breathe, and I definitely shouldn't have worn a black T-shirt, but essentially it's like lederhosen for your cameras, where these two straps, so you got a different camera dangling from on your left side and your right side. And the great thing is that when you want to take a picture, you just simply swing the camera up and it's right there, just like you were holding it, just like you had it like dangling around your neck, only like while you're walking, it doesn't go boom, 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 boom into your chest.
Nice.
And you don't feel like quite such a tourist. I love walking around New York City because I'll have like a blazer or a jacket on, and this underneath the blazer, you kind of don't look like a tourist, even though you have not one but two cameras slung around you. They do have versions of this that only have that will let you carry only one, but it's kind of cool when you have the ones that will let you carry two, because even if you don't have like two decent cameras, like maybe I hit upon this by accident, one of those accidental brilliance things where, again, when I'm just walking around the city, I will have my phone in like a really good like metal tripod bracket. And then I can have my phone like on my left side here. So not only easily being able to pick it out without having to dig through a pocket to get map information, but sometimes like if I want to do photography, I will take out like the really cool, really expensive camera, but sometimes you just want to take a snapshot of something and you don't want to have to fuss and bother, and so that's when you will like deploy the phone, or in this case my little pocket point and shoot Lumix camera. This is how, by the way, I was taking pictures of a mermaid parade over the weekend, and the thing is I had my nice camera that had like a really, really super long zoom on it, which I took most of my pictures on, but sometimes I realized that like, oh my god, this is too much of a zoom, or this, that now they're so close I can't get them, whereas now I can just simply bring up this other camera here and with a different focal length and get that. Now, if you go on Amazon and look for something like this, you can find some of these for much less than $135, which is what the double breathe costs. But the problem is that this has you might be concerned about what happens if I just have this this screw that goes into the tripod mount, wouldn't this camera drop off? Well, no, because it's made out of a really, really good strong metal. And also they have this sort of like locking ring on it so that it can't the ring that attaches can't like disconnect itself unintentionally. And the other thing is that there are all these little touches to it that I didn't appreciate until I had this first version of it for a couple months. For instance, there are these stops that I love that you can release this and then like clamp it down there. What this will do is like when I'm walking along, it will keep the camera like right over my butt so that it's not like swing. I don't want to be vulgar here, but those of us who are male,
it's not gripping your muffins.
No, I'm saying that because this has the ability on a string, it has the ability to swing, and if you don't control like how far forward it can swing, it might swing forward and then down, and then it's another childless summer for Andy Notko. but these stops, you can basically click them in, so you can basically set them so that they're always like in the small of your back, so even when you're like walking briskly, they're not even if you don't have testicles, they're not just swinging and bouncing around everywhere. They're really in control. So for all those reasons, I think you should. I would not trust another company to make this sort of stuff, especially given that I really, really can't afford to replace this lens and this camera. $135 seems like not a whole lot of money to spend, given that I could save $110 and lose like $4,000 worth of camera gear.
Yikes! By the way, not just mermaids in that mermaid parade. A lovely day.
Pirates.
For all sorts of
sea monsters.
Things.
It was technically the sea monster parade, but the mermaids of all ages were quite wonderful.
Where does this go on and why?
This was do you have to ask why? See, this is what I don't understand about your generation.
Oh, it's the Quahog Festival.
Exactly. The New England Quahog Festival and Sea Creature Parade.
I grew up with quahogs. Oh, what fun. What a great day for a photography expedition.
Yeah. I had a
double breeze. Yep. Another childless summer for Andy, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, and this is why. Blueberry syrup, lemon ricotta, pancakes. Who needs children when you can have pancakes that good?
There you go. I got more money for pancakes, and I don't have any children that want me to share it.
Andy's Instagram.
Crazy like an elk.
Well worth following. IHNATKO. We did Andy. We did Renee. There's only one person left. Mr. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week.
So I had to test this one for a while because I wasn't sure if I was going to like it. This is the Logitech Slim Combo. So the way I use this iPad, I like it. So I can. There are parts of it that I don't. So the part of it is that I like is that I can actually take the keyboard off like this.
Let me ask you this. On your keyboard, at the top, above the function keys, there's a long oval. Is there a piece of rubber in there?
There is.
Mine fell out.
Ooh,
what does that do? Do I need it?
I think it just keeps the screen away from the keys.
Oh, it's a protective shield.
Yeah, okay. It's just there to protect the keys. It just spaces the keys so you don't end up with...
Yeah, I've had mine for more than a year, and it's fallen out, so I guess...
Okay, yeah, so we're both using them. Yeah,
I love this.
The nice thing about this, here's what I like about it is, what I don't like about it is you can't use it in your lap. So if you want to use it in your lap, don't complain when you buy it after I said something because you can't. You can't use it in your lap. But you can put it on anything that you'd like, you know, because it's got this little kickstand on the back. So you can pop this little kickstand open.
Love it.
And you can set it down. And what's nice is if you're on a plane, which I'm often on a plane, you can tear off your keyboard and then just set this down and watch it. So it's nice that way. Also, if you're going to draw on it, and I probably draw on my iPad more than anything else I do, it's kind of where I sketch out ideas and then they go, that keynote ideas, and then they go into something else. And being able to rip that off and just start working on it is great. But I do like having the keyboard and I do like having the protection. So it took me a little while because I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like the fact that I can't put it on my, because I have my other iPad cases all let you can just open them up and actually type on them like they're a laptop. And so what I really do like also is this being able to put my pencil somewhere. And yes, I lost the little thing on the end. Whoever, Leo, do you still have this little bit?
Yeah.
This little bit?
Yeah, I do.
Wow. That's impressive.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
I lose them very quickly.
Yeah.
But I was losing my pencils and I
that's because I never use my pencil. So I
I use it all the time. Well, and I for a while I was using Andy's idea, which was I got chopstick holders, a chopstick case, and I had some in there, but then it was just much easier to have it right here.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's it. It's good. Inside of that caveat, you can't put it on your lap. Anything else, it's a great case and I like it.
And don't buy it until you get your iPad, because obviously the next generation iPad won't fit this case. You didn't mention backlit keys, which is huge.
It is backlit. It's actually a relatively comfortable thing to type on.
I mean, I love it. Yeah.
It was part of me really experimenting with what I wanted to do as far as not taking my laptop home every day, trying to leave it there so that when I get up in the morning and having tea, I can still respond to things and work on stuff, but I don't have to lug the truck home, you know, every time. And so it's been great that way. A lot of times I get up in the morning, I have to build a lot of presentations and keynote. And so I get on this guy and I sit there and sketch out my presentations that I have to do that day. And then I just leave it on iCloud. The iCloud works. I mean, anyway, so that's a whole other thing, but leave it on iCloud, come into the office, open up my laptop and build out the keynote doc. And so it's a good mix.
I love it. I'm taking it on my trip, and this is quite beat up now because I've had it since I got the 10.5, and I'm almost certainly going to buy another one if I get a new iPad, because it really is.
Yeah,
I wish it. You know, it's a little. This is a little wobbly.
Yeah, it is. Connection. It doesn't grab right on.
Yeah, and so it slides off a little bit, and you know, and stuff. But it's not the greatest case in terms of protection, but it's still compact, and I just slide that in my backpack, and I have that on the plane, and I love it. Yeah,
but let's ping back to what Renee was talking about with his iPhone case. I really, really wish that more like tablet cases were made of like a really nice leather, because I'm kind of tired of having to. They're inexpensive and it's fine. So after about 6 months or a year, you throw it away and get another one. But I really, really want my iPad, which is a device that I use almost every single day and is always in my hands when I leave the house. I want it to have that sort of patina and that sort of where the oil of my fingers has interacted with the leather and made these really deep, rich patterns. And it starts looking like, as Renee so aptly say, Indiana Jones's bullwhip after time. You really like the street cred of being able to say this. My iPad has been places and done things, man. I didn't win it in a real estate sales competition. This is my constant companion for the past 3 years. Inseparable.
Yeah, this is aggressively plastic. Unfortunately. On the other hand, it's rigid enough, and yeah, I don't know. I am going, as you know, away. You guys will be hosting the show for the next 3 weeks. Tomorrow I get on a plane to Barcelona, then on a boat sailing around the Western Mediterranean.
Oh, jealous.
I am so excited.
Rough life.
And you won't be able to see my pictures on Instagram because I've deactivated my account, or on Facebook because I've deactivated my account. Even Twitter now I've locked up because I decided I want to go private. I'm done. I have enough. I don't want to. So I decided, here, but you know, I know my
You're
family.
You're the hero we deserve, Leo.
I know. my family wants to see pictures, probably a lot more than anybody else did anyway. So what I'm going to use is, and we've plugged this before, and Bill Atkinson was here last week, as I mentioned, he'll be here again on Friday for the second part of that interview on triangulation. But he wrote Photocard. Bill made the most amazing app. And this is what I decided to do is, and I've never done this. I thought it's about time I did this. With Photocard, you could take the pictures that you take from your trip, whatever, you know, you choose. And I'm going to try to do one a day, put those pictures on a beautiful postcard that's about the size of a half an 8.5 by 11 inch page. And on the other side, write a little message. This is the message I'm going to send to my family saying, hey, we're about to set out on our trip. Get ready. You're going to get a postcard every day. Bill mails them himself. So it takes a few days. You know, I'll mail this from wherever I am, email this from wherever I am. And actually, you see, I have 7 addresses, so I can do a mailing list. And then Bill prints them out in Silicon Valley, prints them beautifully. They're laminated and everything. And then mails them out. So they'll be mailed from the United States, not from wherever we are in Europe. That's a little bit of a disadvantage. But on the other hand, it comes faster. So it'll take about 5 days after I start tomorrow before they start arriving. But I'm going to send a postcard every day to family and friends. And if you're interested, we've used these before for our Twit Christmas cards. It's a fantastic app. It's free. Costs about $1.50 to send one of these. You buy credits. Bill sells the credits. And then you use 2 credits for a domestic card and 3 credits to send it internationally. And then how much the credit costs depend on how many you buy. But it's roughly 75 cents a credit. So this is about $1.50 to mail. Really love this app. So this is and if you guys want to be on the mailing list, just let me know and I'll send you a card as well. Because I think I'm just trying the old-fashioned way, sort of old-fashioned.
Yeah.
Of actually sending postcards from my trip instead of posting it all on Instagram. Now, if I had pictures of mermaids, that might be different. Follow Andy Iannacco. He is at ihnatko.com. You'll also find his Flickr group at Andy I, his Instagram at Iannacco, his Twitter at Iannacco. He's got lots of great stuff.
Damn it. Someone beat me to Iannacco on Flickr. I had to take the Andy I.
Who else has Iannacco?
No, I'm joking. I was an early enough Flickr user that, right. That was also that was old. That was back in the day when I tried to get Andy I everywhere before realizing that was a fool's errand and that it's more important to get the Iannacco.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here, Mr. Alex Lindsay. Follow him on Twitter at AlexLindsay. And, he'll tell you what's going on.
I am starting to try to use Instagram more, so I'm going the other direction, Leo. I'm posting more things, being less private because I don't have as many secret things to do. And then I've heard of this thing called Snapchat that I might actually try. I hear it's the kids like it. So if you search for me, you might be able to find that. And then
you're going the opposite way from me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going completely the opposite. It took us a little while to figure out how we were going to use Patreon, but Patreon is really my R&D group. So if you go there, you see me testing all of our training apparatuses, and I'll talk about video, and it's Andy and I are having discussions on the Patreon thing as we try to figure out if we want to do something that looks like a show. And so if you want to be part of that, you can go to the patreon.com/pixelcore. It's pretty cheap. And it's mostly there. It's just like the group that I kind of test things with. So anyway, if you're interested, come check us out.
Very nice. And imore.com to read Renee Ritchie's tribute to Tim Cook. Follow him on Vector too. imore.com/Vector, his podcast. And he's going to go out in the 40-degree weather and chase Pokemon now.
The event ended an hour ago, Leo. I'm going to stay here and work on my next video.
Thank God.
In the air conditioning.
In the nice and chill.
imore.com/, because I saw last week it didn't work, but we fixed it. So imore.com/vector should be working again for you.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
I've been using that address. Yikes.
Well, it was down last show. And I don't know why. Oh. But we fixed it. Right away I saw it. I'm like, what's going on here? Oh, internet aliasing is so hard.
Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Alex. I will see you in a few weeks. Have a good one.
Jealous.
Thank you all for being here. If you want to join us in studio, I had a nice studio audience. A family was here and left. I think they were the Von Trapp family. The balloon was out there. I'm not sure, but they had to run.
Did they sing?
They were singing on the way out. Good night. Oh, good night. Auf Wiedersehen. But thanks to Lucas and Eugene, who are also here. And thanks to it was the Van Trapp Helton family. They were here briefly. And if you want to be in studio, just email tickets at twit.tv. Tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. You can also watch our live stream, twit.tv/live. If you do that, be in the chat room at irc.twit.tv and have much fun. Much fun in the chat room. Now, if you don't want to watch live because you have a life or something, You can always get on-demand versions of the show at twit.tv/MBW, short for MacBreak Weekly, or subscribe in your favorite podcatcher, and you'll get it automatically when it ships right after the show, which we do the show Tuesdays around about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. So you could expect it, about 4 or 5 hours after that as the editors churn through all the profanities and eliminate. Thank you so much for being here. Now back to work, because break time is over.